Real Bad is part of the Cage Club Podcast Network. If you want to explore more podcasts about movies and nostalgia, head over to cageclub.me and check out some of our friends. Hello and welcome to another episode of Real Bad, the podcast where we talk about real bad movies and why they want to hurt us. I'm your host, Nick Jenkins. I'm joined, as always, by Matthew Gatos. Hello.
Hello.
And two people returning very quickly, actually. We did a quick turnaround for you guys. We have Bill Mead.
Hey, how's it going?
And Tuna.
Hey.
Or Joe Maddish.
Yeah.
But we like Tuna.
We like Tuna's Tuna. Better.
Okay. That's both work for SciShow in different capacities, and both also have my love of crap movies at times.
I was going to say, and both have my love.
My love. That too.
Aww.
I've known them for a long time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I love you guys.
Thanks, man.
Oh, it's good to be back here,
guess
man.
I'm going to leave. I guess I haven't been a part of this group as long.
Bye. You just don't understand us.
No, apparently.
For those listening at home, everyone but Matt is hugging.
Yeah, it's true. And they're like reaching past me to hug, so I'm just pushed out of the way.
Move your head out of the way.
Very uncomfortable.
It's all good. Today we are going to be talking about the Stephen King directed film Maximum Overdrive. His only directing credit. Not his only film directing credit. Not his only feature film directing credit. His only directing credit, which is going to be something that I come back to again and again and again with something like this. But before we get too deep into it, we need to do a 60-second plot dump. And for that, it's going to have to be Matthew Gatos.
Oh, right.
Because you haven't done one in a while.
I haven't, and I feel like this one will take 3 seconds.
All right, here we go in 3, 2, 1.
All right, we open on a card, a title card that says, apparently the Earth has fallen into the tail of a comet. And I don't know if that's a real thing that can happen. We might discuss that later. But then that apparently causes machines to start freaking out, and they start attacking people. This leads to a ring of semi-trucks entrapping a group of people in a truck stop called the Dixie Boy, I believe. And these people just kind of wait it out for a while, and then a machine gun, like a mounted on a vehicle, shows up, starts killing some people, so they go out and they have to blow that up. That's pretty much all that really happens throughout the movie, and then at the end, they decide to escape, so they sneak under an underground tunnel, and they go find a boat, and they just leave. The end!
Ta-da!
That's really all that, like, happens AC/DC. In the movie. AC/DC is there.
Yeah.
Their songs are the soundtrack, even when it's not appropriate at all.
At all.
Not at
Which
all.
Which is like a surprising amount of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's, to be fair, there's only one moment where I was like, there should not be a song happening right now. And there only is because you wanted to include some AC/DC.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I always want to include AC/DC in my life. Not in a movie.
Not in the middle of like a tense scene where they have to crawl through these tunnels to get sneak past the demon semi-trucks. And all of a sudden you hear, "For those about to rock." And it's like,
fire.
That has nothing to do with this situation.
Well, no. They were getting ready to rock.
They were.
Oh, well, then I salute them.
Okay. Indeed. So the entire soundtrack, even the weird psycho ripoff effect that it was very jarring to me, and like it hurt me when that brank 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 thing happened.
I had a big problem with that.
Yeah, but every time that was also AC/DC. Like,
I think jarring is a good word for this whole movie.
This whole movie is jarring.
Yeah.
Bit of history before we get into our reactions about this. So at this point, 1986, I believe it was filmed in 85. Stephen King was riding high. Like, that's funny. Actually, we're going to get back to that. But he was riding high in a wave of success, as well as cocaine. But success, we'll talk about first. So we had Christine and Carrie, and we had all of these films that were just big smash hits. The Shining, even though he hated it. And he was very prolific. He wrote a lot of books that I still, to this day, adore. I think are really incredible books. And then Dino De Laurentiis got the idea to just give him a whole movie to make. Gave him $10 million, which is, I would say, lower budget, but not – it's not nothing.
It's enough that it made me look up while I was watching this movie. I was like – they spent a lot of money, like enough money
yeah.
on this movie where I was surprised that they gave him that much money to do the stunts and the explosions yes. and then the remote mm-hmm. control semi-trucks and all that.
Which like, were all pretty good.
Yeah, like, I was, that's why yeah. I was like, they gave a lot of money to this man.
And I specifically didn't look that up because I wanted to have my reaction here. As soon as like halfway through the bridge scene, it's like they dump the truck in the river. And I thought, this is going to be a really expensive movie.
That's the same moment that got me.
It's not going to, it's like, I can't imagine that it's going to live up to however much money they spent on this.
To close down the drawbridge alone.
Just that opening sequence is
all those watermelons.
That's at least like $30 worth of watermelons there. That opening sequence is like the drawbridge opens. There's trucks falling off of it. There's people falling off of it. There's people jumping through windows for some reason. And like, that whole scene is poorly directed, but
it is.
A lot is happening, and it's showing you the chaos of this new mechanical overlord world that's happening. And it's effective in a way, like as far as like showing you that chaos is going to ensue. Mm-hmm. But it also did make me feel like immediately, this guy doesn't know what he's doing in making a movie. He just threw everything at the wall and hoped some of it stuck.
Well, let's go a little further here. So he had gotten to a position of megalomania at this point, which was coupled with he was a severe cocaine addict. And I don't use that word lightly. He was an addict, and that's the word that he...
And say he's admitted that.
Yeah, he has admitted that fully, that he was in a bad, bad place. And it shows, but when I was reading about the production of this, it became even more fascinating that, like, for instance, there's a scene with a runaway lawnmower, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where the lawnmower is, because all of the machines are getting taken over, and a lawnmower chases a kid. And the crew was like, okay, well, we need to remove the blades of the lawnmower. And Stephen King was like, no, I can see him. That makes it more dangerous. So that's what I want. I want to feel the danger. Now,
it was felt.
It was felt because the thing went haywire, coincidentally, and it crashed into a thing of wood and it splintered all the wood off and the wood landed in the cinematographer's eye and blinded him in one eye.
And he actually, did he lose the eye, I think?
He did.
Yeah.
He had an eye patch for sure.
He lost his eye. He wound up suing Stephen King for unsafe work environment. They settled out of court.
Fair. He should have.
I disagree.
And this is a point where I, even when I was teaching, I'm always like Captain Safety. And like, you know, there's a difference in having stunts with stunt people who know, like, this is dangerous and I'm going to put myself in danger to do X, Y, Z. There's a difference in that and your cinematographer being blinded, you know, or half blinded in this case, because you didn't want to follow safety protocols. Like, those are two very different things. Yeah. No one should be getting this kind of accidentally hurt on a film set. Like, that is gross. But he carried on. This film stars Emilio Estevez, and who I really like in here.
Yeah.
I don't hate him. I don't think he's the problem. But originally, Stephen King wanted Bruce Springsteen,
which would have somehow been worse.
I'm not going to fight you on this, but I think I would have liked to see him more because I have something to say about Emilio later.
I've only seen Bruce Springsteen in one movie, and that was High Fidelity, and he played himself. So I don't have much basis for him being an actor. But at least Emilio is like likable as a person, I think, in everything he's in. And I don't know that I would have had any sort of connection to any of the characters if Bruce Springsteen was the one playing that main guy.
Like I'm sold based on like, oh, Coach Bombay and some trucks. Like, cool. I would not have had that with the boss.
I think I'll just jump into it. His likability was my problem in that I was really concerned for Emilio in this movie. And that he looked terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was sharing with Stephen King at the time, because, you know, I know that the Sheen family all has, you know, a history of substance abuse, and we're not making fun of that, but he just looked really worn out, like he was sleeping an hour a day, sort of, looked heat exhausted.
And that's not even just in the scene where he's supposed to be acting like that.
The first time you see him, you're just like, you're puffy looking, man.
To be fair, I think everybody looks terrible in this movie.
Yeah, all right.
I
was concerned. I was concerned for Emilio Estevez.
There are some very attractive people. Emilio Estevez is one of them.
Pat Hingle.
Well, there's Pat Hingle, Commissioner Gordon. Yardley Smith.
Yeah. Which I was like.
The voice of Lisa Simpson.
Yeah. Right. Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's never not Lisa Simpson.
couldn't not hear it.
Even with a Southern accent applied.
She has gone on record saying this movie embarrasses her a lot.
To be fair, though, she's one of my favorite characters in the movie because she's one of the few people who makes smart choices.
Yes.
Like, when she is saying, like, we should go, like, she's absolutely right. And everyone else is like, wait there. And she's, I mean, she doesn't help matters in any way at all, but she does stand off to the side and yell, is that guy dead? Are you dead?
Is he dead?
Is he dead?
Is he dead? Yeah. So, couple
they also look the same. I put that in my notes.
Oh, the husband and
her husband. Yeah, they look like they're wearing the same color, like clothing, and their faces are just as equally squinty.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, okay, Yardley Smith and man who plays Kurt just look like brother and sister.
Man who plays Kurt.
I had
Kurt.
A problem with that,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, it was very strange.
Going back to the production, once Emilio Estevez was cast and he couldn't get Bruce Springsteen, he sort of had kind of a temper tantrum and just didn't really care about the movie after that. It was like, I didn't get my way. But he still went on to do it. They made him do all of the promotion. So, like, if you look at the original poster, he's on the poster. He's in the
he's
trailers.
He's the first character you see in the movie.
Oh, he's the first goddamn character you see in the movie.
Which
he walks up to an ATM that says, like, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
And he said, like, hey, this thing says I'm an asshole.
Which, I'll say, the opening of the movie, like, the first three scenes, I'll call them, are the perfect setup for this movie in its current form. Because you have, like, exposition.jpg, which is like, okay, so I know that any story here is going to be super clunky. Mm-hmm. Then it opens with, like, Stephen King putting his face.
Can I read that exposition real quick? Because it's so specific.
Yeah, I mean.
Okay, this leads us into a new segment that I want to try out, which is called A Dramatic Reading.
Oh, I wasn't prepared.
And today,
but I will try.
Matthew Gatos will be leading us through a dramatic reading of exposition.jpg.
On June 19th, 1987, at 9:47 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Earth passed into the extraordinarily diffused tail of Rhea M, a rogue comet. According to the astronomical calculations, the planet would remain in the tail of the comet for the next 8 days, 5 hours, 29 minutes, and 23 seconds. How dramatic of an opening crawl is that for your movie?
It's not even crawling.
Yeah, no, it's just sits there.
It's just an opening.
You reading that is essentially, like,
right?
Not much different than the actual experience of seeing it on screen.
Yeah.
Because it's just a picture.
Yeah.
Because, like,
it just sits there and you're like, that's a lot of very specific numbers.
Right.
What am I supposed to do with this information?
Right. It's weird, too, because you were talking about before we started recording that the math doesn't add up to how many days.
No, like, I didn't bring this up in my telling of the plot, but the very end is also a title card. After they're getting away on the boat, they just tell us that 2 days after, a large UFO was destroyed in space by a Russian weather satellite, which happened to be equipped with a laser cannon and class 4 nuclear missiles. Approximately 6 days later, the Earth passed beyond the tail of Rhea M exactly as predicted. And it's, one, that's crazy. That we'll talk about that, but it's never brought up in the movie.
No.
Anything about UFOs or Russian satellites or anything. But just like Nick said, the math of 2 days after. So, one, are you saying 2 days after this? Like the boat scene, the end of the movie?
Right.
2 days after this happened? If so, that's going to be what, like 4 days since the start of this story? 5 days maybe since our first scene when we are told how long this is going to last? And then you say approximately 6 days later. So you've got a total of like 10, 11 days there.
Yeah.
Exactly as predicted. When at the beginning you say 8 days. So none of, like, to be so specific and then to not be accurate with that timeline makes no sense to me.
I'm glad you did the math.
Yeah.
It was too annoying not to.
So, Tuna, go back to what you were saying, though.
The second thing you see is, like, Stephen King being super weird with, like, his flip-up sunglasses in front of an ATM and being told he's an asshole. And I don't think I've ever watched a film where the word asshole gets thrown around so much. So,
they
like,
do use it a lot.
Yeah,
they use
a lot. Like...
That's I don't know all of the Stephen King tropes, or I don't want to say cliches, but he's got a tendency to not be good at insults.
And also just like swearing, not inappropriately as in like too much, but just like unnaturally swearing.
Yes. He's an unnatural curse word.
He does. Yeah. It's weird because he does a lot unnaturally in his in the written word. Mm-hmm. Even though I like a lot of his stories, and I think he's a wonderful technical writer, he like people say things in his stories that I'm like, nobody would say that. Mm-hmm. Why did you say that?
Mm-hmm. And see, that's I get that because it's like he's a writer, so he's like intending you to read it.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that bled over into the production of this, where it's like, clearly he never bothered thinking about like, okay, now what does that sound when somebody actually says it out loud?
Yeah. Yeah. There's some real bad lines in this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And real bad exchanges. Yes. Like there's a back and forth that I'm like, are you humans?
Maybe nobody... you're the aliens.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, you're a Russian UFO. I knew it.
The trucks were the heroes the whole time.
Yeah.
Right.
At one point, I kind of was like, not thinking exactly that the trucks were the heroes, but kind of just like, maybe they should win. Like, I don't care about any of these people in this truck stop right now. Like, some of them are terrible people. Some of them, just get away with terrible things. The owner just has an armory in his basement for a reason we don't really ever find out. But I'm like, these aren't people that I care about that much.
No.
Yeah, I don't even
just thought
know
of another
of
real
names.
Good. I have five possible real goods now. So we're good. Okay, we're good. I want to go around and I want to just, we've gotten into the minutiae here, but I want to talk about our experiences with this. So Bill, I don't remember if it's Bill or Tuna who put this on the list.
I don't know.
I put it on the list.
You put it on the list.
I put it on the list.
Yeah. Let's start with you then.
All right.
What's your experience with this movie?
I had never seen it before this week.
Okay.
The reason I put it on the list is because I was watching a YouTube video by some channel that was like one of those like top five things about movies type channels. And
like
it was
Watch Mojo or something.
One of those.
Yeah.
And it was like top five like overacting moments in movies. And that's where like I went and added like five things to the Go Bad list. I was like, all of these need to be on here. And Wanda's scene of "We made you." Yeah. We made you.
Wanda is the waitress.
Yeah.
Who
is maybe the first person in the movie outside of the bridge scene that we see directly get harmed
by
a machine because a knife decides to cut her.
It's a carving knife.
Yeah.
That, you know, one of those mechanical, like in Rocky Horror. Yeah. And it turns on. I don't know why I went to Rocky Horror.
I was going to say, obscure reference.
That's the only one I can think of that used one of these things and used it to comic effect. It turns on, it cuts her. It's weird because like it's an effective scene, especially with the sound design.
Mm-hmm.
Like it turns on and she screams and it cuts her really badly, and it's and she's sort of played as very, I don't know, simple. I would say she's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
she's not a really complex character.
No, the most depth we get is that maybe she has a relationship with Bubba.
Maybe.
The owner of the place.
I was going to ask that. Yeah.
There's a couple random like sex scenes in this movie that like are off screen, but are like, implied that you're just like, wait, did you just stop to go have sex in the middle of this like trunk murder scene?
Yeah.
So there's one time where her and Bubba come in where you're like, I'm pretty sure they just did it. And I guess that's her whole character is she works here and she has to die eventually.
Yeah, and it was weird to me that she gets the existential, that she gets to be the one to project the existential, we made you thing.
Oh, and it's just, I hated that scene so much.
Why?
Because it's like they kept going on with it. Like in Jurassic Park, it's the same idea. We made you, and yet you're destroying us.
Yeah.
But John Hammond doesn't like walk out there with his little cane and we made you. Like,
but in a worse made movie, he would.
Right, exactly. Yes,
like the B movie version of, right. of that is somebody going, "I made you. You right. can't eat me." You know, but Spielberg and Crichton are probably better storytellers right. than yeah. that. And yeah, I found that weird. The weird part to me was like, I don't have a problem with the existential crisis of like, we made you. You don't get to act mm-hmm. this way, and the slaves turning on mm. the master sort of thing. Like, I'm totally on board for that idea. But the way it was done.
Well, yeah, if it was right. carried out throughout any other part of the movie, aside from her just shouting it. Yeah. I think yeah. that could be interesting.
And that's the thing is it's, again, show, don't tell.
Yes, like, absolutely.
The golden rule.
Yeah. Well, and I am a big fan of quiet dialogue. And mm-hmm. and there were moments where I was like, oh, maybe we're going to get some nice quiet dialogue between Emilio Estevez and I don't know who played the woman character.
I had to look up her character's name.
I don't remember
her. Brett.
Yeah, I had to look that up.
Oh, yeah, Brett, like, right. Hey, Bill, I'm Brett.
Yeah.
Yeah. She is played by Laura Harrington.
I don't know anything that she's yeah. been in, but regardless.
Maximum Overdrive and Polly and What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
A Buckaroo Banzai?
Yeah. Oh, she's one of the grape kids.
Okay.
In What's okay. Eating Gilbert Grape.
Excellent.
One of the grapes.
But,
she's, yeah, just one of the bunch.
But like you could have had something there where they're talking and they're just musing about it and, you know, and he or she says, you know, This is a slave revolt or something like that. You know, the, and then we're done. We don't right. need to have somebody shouting it to the heavens. So, but that I found was a very Stephen King moment, mm-hmm. like to have somebody just say like, okay, yeah, nobody would say that. And now you've said it 50 times. Please stop talking. Right.
Well, also if it is like we have so many rules that are just like set up and broken in this movie
yeah.
of like, okay, if this is caused by the comet, okay, it's a weird, like, astronomical thing that, like, if you're passing through the tail of a comet, weird stuff starts happening on this planet. Okay, that's the rule we get first moment of the movie. So you can kind of accept that.
Yeah.
But then if you go into that, like, the slave uprising thing of, like, we made these vehicles, they are taking their revenge on us, like, that does not fit into that astronomical thing at all.
No, and
because that, like they're deciding to do this in that reality.
It's an immediate contradiction because you get that I love the exposition.jpg.
Yeah.
But you get that exposition of the comet is going to be causing something, but then almost the very next thing you see immediately is the screen flashing fuck you and then the ATM saying you're an asshole,
yeah.
which that implies a personality. And it implies thought process,
yeah.
which does not mean haywire. But the comet feels like it's going to make things go haywire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So so and there's an immediate contradiction there.
And there's only one reference in the entire movie to the exposition.jpg where Brett alludes to the fact that like maybe it's the comet causing all of this. And then they just like move on to the next scene. And it's like that's the only like connection we have to that first moment. And aside from Emilio when he's like completely out of it in one scene because mm-hmm. he gets tired for some reason.
You know, he's pumping gas.
Well, he looks fine, and then, like, 2 seconds later, they cut to him, and he's, like, falling down. I'm like, what just happened? But he muses about, like, aliens, and what if they came here, and they're looking for something, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No.
And it also doesn't really fit in with what we have already learned throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. So it's not, like, a big revelation-type moment where we're like, oh, I get it now. And then you see that end card about the Russians shooting down a UFO, and you're like, is that what he was talking about? Because
when that card came up, I literally sat forward on my couch and went, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, wait, where did a UFO?
That I just burst into laughter. It was just like, no, that's the perfect end to this weird movie.
It's
like,
a weird movie.
Yeah.
And I had a question for you guys, because when Brett goes into some detail about the being in the tail of the comet, does she say any of that on screen?
See, okay. My memory, going back to it, I'm feeling like that was ADR.
Yeah.
I feel like because also the glow that was added in the sky looked like shit.
Yep.
It's not great.
Yeah.
It makes me feel like the comet thing was added afterward.
Yeah. And honestly, this movie works without it.
It totally works.
Like, the idea of the machines freaking out and trying to attack us, that's a fine horror movie.
Totally.
Just let that happen. Yeah. And to add in the comet stuff and the UFO stuff at the end is like, just confuses me more than anything. It doesn't make me understand the story or give a good reason for it happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes, and then even the way the, so you get to the end, it's weird because there, Stephen King has done this in several of his stories where you get to the end and humanity, like there's these last few people who are like, okay, I think we're safe. But then I don't know if this was done in editing, in post-production, or if this was his original vision of it. Mm-hmm. They shoot the bazooka at the we didn't even talk about the truck with the Green Goblin on
We've
it.
We've got what a lot hell? We haven't talked about yet.
Yeah, but yeah. They shoot – so Emilio shoots the his name's Bill, right?
Yeah, Bill. Yeah,
Bill shoots the bazooka the truck. It blows up, and then the rock music comes on.
That's the end of the movie.
And that's the end of the movie.
That's the whole climax. Yeah. A truck was real sneaky, and no one heard it. And then it creeped up, ran over one dude. Emilio's like, Brad, not on my watch. And he bazookas that truck, and the movie's just over.
Yeah. Right. It's like... It's weird to be in this celebratory moment of like, what, you could have just shot it in the face the whole time?
It's so anticlimactic because it's the same thing they've been doing to every other truck.
And that's the one thought I had when they first pulled the bazooka out of the basement and they started like shooting two of the trucks that were charging them was like, okay, now just shoot the rest of the trucks. Like, right. You have more guns and stuff.
All the guns.
Just shoot all of the trucks and you can escape. Like, why is that a problem?
They
never explain that.
I mean, it's they never bother to explain it, and I can kind of see the connection because with the gas scene, I felt like it was implied that, oh, now trucks are coming from all over the place. They're coming in from hundreds of miles around to be gassed up because these are the people who are going to do it. So it's like, okay, I get it that you're not going to like rocket launch everything. But before it got to the point where all these trucks were coming in, you could have.
When there are six trucks.
Yeah, when there are six trucks and you easily defeat two of them, maybe think, hey... Let's shoot the other four.
Well, it's also a failing of storytelling because the idea being that I feel like that truck with the Green Goblin face was supposed to be kind of like a leader in some way.
Yeah, it even had the glowing eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the beginning of this movie, a guy named Andy pulls up to this truck stop before anything's really started going too crazy at the truck stop. And he pulls in...
Frankie Faison.
Yeah, from Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
But he pulls in... in this big toy truck. It says like Happy Toys on the side. It's like a toy store delivery truck or whatever. And
I think it also, the subtitle on there, I think is there's another load coming.
No, not that gross.
It isn't? Okay.
It says like, here comes another load of joy.
Oh.
So it's close to gross.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, but at least it put the joy in there. So it doesn't just end on load. But
actually, mine ended on coming. So...
Yeah. Yep. We could spend another 15 minutes taking that apart, but
I think
we won't.
I need to pin that as my tweet. Mine ended on coming. Hashtag. Yeah. Mine ended on coming. Anyway, let's move on.
So he pulls into this truck stop and he's driving that truck that has, for some reason, inexplicably, a giant face of the Green Goblin from the Spider-Man comics on the front of it.
Do you think... So Marvel now... We know Marvel now is like this big... Well, now it's tied to Disney. Big empire of all this media. Back then, before the bankruptcy issues, were they... Did they? What phone call took place to get that?
There had to be one, right? Because there's not only is there the Green Goblin's face gigantic on the front of this evil truck, but then there's also at one point Emilio goes into the truck to see who's driving this truck that almost ran me over, and there's like a little Green Goblin jack in the box that jumps out. And so I feel like if you have like a couple references to this character, there had to be some phone call made.
I mean,
but
that was without a doubt the Green Goblin.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because I'm not sure when Green Goblin was invented.
Well, I think he's a real old villain.
He's
right?
real because he killed.
He's in like the second episode.
Spoilers: he killed Gwen Stacy back in like the 50s or 60s.
Yeah, but I think he's introduced in like maybe the second or third issue of Spider-Man.
Okay,
So, okay. See, and I didn't know it was Green Goblin until literally this week when I mentioned it to Sam that we were watching this. Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, yeah, with the Green Goblin. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
The last time I had seen this, I did not know who Green Goblin was. I thought they invented it for this movie.
Same, yeah.
Which they should have done. If you're going to put a big menacing face in your truck,
that clown on the back was pretty sketchy.
Like, you could have, like, why isn't it? I mean, it could have been anything scary. Like,
yeah, big clown face actually
would have
been.
Even just a skull or a clown face,
and
anything.
That's the thing. It's Stephen King who references all of his other works and all of his other works. Make it Pennywise or something.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant.
It's so good, is it? There's a fix. Boom. One fix down. It was really weird. I think it works as, like, I would buy the toy of that, even though I didn't enjoy this movie. Like, a little replica of that truck would be pretty cool to have on my shelf. But... it also.
I'm not thinking you're wrong. Actually, that
it's a pretty cool toy.
It is a cool toilet. Yeah,
I'm not sure they have the licensing money to really make that.
No,
based on this movie, made $7 million, I think. After costing $10 million.
Well, and that's not even including marketing. And they did a lot of marketing.
I think the initial take was $3 million or something like that, and then it slowly crept up to $7 million through the years.
Oh, jeez.
But it doesn't make any sense. They don't. No one is like, hey. Cool truck, dude. This is crazy. Like, they just kind of
Do at the start. He walks up and he's like, what is this thing? And he's like, something, ain't it? And then that's it.
Right.
Something.
Right.
Like, it seems like Andy was given that truck. He doesn't seem like he matches the personality of the truck.
No.
No.
Like, I feel like you need a guy driving that truck who's like, looks like he would drive a giant demon face truck.
Or he needs to get out of it and go, oh, Jesus Christ, don't bring up the truck. It's my job. I have to do it.
It's covered in bugs. It's disgusting.
Yeah, you know, something. I think either way, but he gets out and it's just sort of like, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely bizarre. So, Bill, we talked a little bit last night about your experience with this movie. So you had or had not seen this?
I had not seen this. And I was excited to because I have known about this being a so bad it's good sort of movie. So I went in with that. Oh, this is going to be sort of a fun little 2 hours of my life where I have a good laugh. And I was really disappointed.
Oh,
I was disappointed, but I will say I was telling all of you, most of you, that I was trying to watch this a second time because I think with some bad movies, you got to give it that watch where you're not really paying attention, you're doing laundry or something like that. And I didn't give it that. I gave it my full undivided attention with the subtitles on and everything. And it was slightly disappointing because it was bad, but I was more bored than anything.
Okay.
Because as we've sort of alluded to, these trucks round up around the gas station and everyone just kind of continues on like it's a big sleepover at the gas station.
Yeah, it was similar to my issues that we had, was it last week with Beyond the Gates, where you have a horror movie, you have this tense action thing, you have the sense of dread built into your story of like, in Beyond the Gates, it was like they had to save their dad's soul. In this, it was like there's trucks that are threatening you and driving around this truck stop. And they're just like, okay, cool. Let's not blow them all up. Let's go to bed. Let's go have sex. Let's go do this thing. Let's all do this instead of like trying to figure out this problem as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And another issue I had is with the character deaths that we did see happen on screen, most of those, if not all of those, were avoidable.
Yeah.
With Duncan, I was asking who his name was earlier, the kid's dad, and I want to talk about the kid too.
Oh yeah. We haven't brought up the kid yet. Deke.
But the Bible salesman, Pat Hingle's character, and was it Wanda? Mm-hmm. All of them go outside against everyone else's advice. Everyone says, hey, come back inside. We don't know who's driving that truck. By the way, murder has happened and no one's stopping their daily routine.
Yeah.
And it's just...
Well, also, I don't know if you guys know this, but diesel trucks are loud.
They're so loud.
Did they also sleep? Did they also everyone's going for a nap? We'll just chill here. Don't worry about us, guys.
But the trucks sneak up on them a few times
at the end, at the marina.
And it's weird because we go to great lengths in this movie to talk about how loud these trucks are and to show how loud the trucks are. And then all of a sudden, it's on you.
I think, and Bill, you're onto something with the only people who die are the ones who go outside.
Yeah.
Except for the scene when the trucks decide to destroy the entire truck stop. They don't ever seem like a real threat to the inside people. There's even a scene where someone runs outside and I think it's Emilio goes out and like is pulling them in. And as he's pulling them in, the truck is driving straight towards them really fast. And as they get to the door, the truck just stops. And like politely is like, I won't hit the gas station. You guys are cool with me.
Well, I think it's because like it's supposed to be a mystery. Like, why didn't it ram the thing? But it wasn't.
It didn't come across. It didn't come across that way. That way.
No. Because they want them to refuel them. Right?
Yeah.
That's the.
I'm not saying it's good. No, I'm saying I think that's what it was supposed to be. And it didn't work. Because you are just going, why didn't it just ram?
At one point, they do say they can't ram us because they'll fall through the cellar.
Oh, there is that. Yeah, you're right.
But they do ram the building. They don't fall through the cellar.
I was going to say, they ram the building and it just explodes.
I have a question. Do these trucks have a sense of self-preservation? Because you don't see the trucks do anything to... They seem to value their lives more than taking their lives and taking a human with them.
Right.
And so by that, I mean, they could run through that gas station at any time.
Mm-hmm.
This movie's over.
I have so many questions about what the trucks are.
Yeah.
Which I shouldn't be bothering myself with, mm-mm.
The inconsistency of the rules of this film, like, okay, so we talked about the knife that cuts off Wanda's arm. That is the only time that we see something that shouldn't move moving.
And it jumps.
Yeah. Like it jumps onto her. And there are other things like that that are implied that they must have killed people in other ways because we see them dead. We see a lady with a hairdryer next to her. I'm like, okay, how did that kill her? I don't really know, but she's dead now. And so there's these objects that don't have implied movement to them that apparently have killed people in this movie. Yeah. But we don't see that happen, so we don't really understand how this world works. Yes. I can follow trucks that come to life and run people over.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That makes sense to me. I can even do the pop can machine shooting the cans at the coach's head and killing him. And I'm cool with that. It's when it's the things like the knife that like can jump off the counter and cut her up.
Yeah. Or the sprinklers.
The sprinklers turning on.
That like, was off. Weird. I was like, well, wait a minute. Yeah. Is this
I feel
an
like
electric?
That's their little just contribution. Like the power to, like, in we can't general. Really kill anyone, so we're just going to spook you a little bit.
Yeah, so the kid Deke is – he escapes one of the – machine uprisings.
Right. So he's playing baseball.
A steamroller runs through their baseball field.
Okay, now look.
That was
fucking scary.
It also is like very early on in the movie, and we haven't seen a ton of examples of like specific machines being angry or freaking out. And so to see a steamroller burst through the outfield and run over children very early in this film, I was like, whoa, Steven.
Yeah.
And
slow down.
Graphically, like, that kid, like, it is a disturbing shot.
I thought it was going to be more implied than it was, and it's not.
And I've heard that he wanted that exact death to be more gruesome.
Yeah.
He wanted
it to, like, paint blood across the outfield, essentially.
And they filmed it, and they got it, but they had to cut it. Because the censors were like, you can't
kid blood all over this movie.
Can't show that on television?
But like that sequence is effective, and like the coach's death when he gets beamed in the head with a Coke can is like
pretty gross.
Like, it's pretty gross, and it's effective, and I'm sort of ramped up at that point. Like, okay, the movie's dumb, and it doesn't make a lot of sense, but at least we're gonna have some like interesting kills. Mm-hmm. And but then no,
I just realized the exact same thing happens in Transformers 2. There's a Mountain Dew machine that freaks out and starts shooting cans of pop people.
That's the first one.
Is it the first one?
I think it's the first one.
I haven't seen them in a while, so I will trust you.
Michael Bay must love this movie.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it is kind of.
It is kind of.
Lots of unnecessary explosions.
Right.
Trucks being mad at people.
So
that's Transformers.
Instead of the Green Goblin, they should have got Optimus Prime.
Yes. I'm on board.
Yeah, you are. I would be on board for that.
Yeah.
So, but to carry on with sort of what I think works in this film, which is interesting to me, is I think Emilio Estevez works well in this film. I think he's decent to better than decent is my attitude, because I don't think anyone is great in this movie. I don't think anyone had a lot to work with. But like it's interesting to me to see like the first line from him. Is just it's a stupid line, but it's a simple line of where the guy Pat Hingle comes out to say, "Hey, I need to talk to you," and Emilio just looks at him and says, "I got eggs on," and it's a dumb line, but the way he delivers it is like good actor, like good job, very simple. And he does a good job of sort of anchoring this movie and being that the pillar that holds us to the plot. And I agree. I don't remember who said it, but I was worried about him through the whole thing. And then I got more worried about him because, like, he seemed like a decent human being. He didn't seem like...
Well, he has some criminal past.
Yeah.
That we're not sure entirely what that was.
Criminal past and college educated. Yes. What get thrown about out right. at him.
Yeah. But I don't know what his past really is. I don't know.
And, well, this is my thing with pretty much the whole movie. I don't think the movie knows either.
No, I agree.
And that's like, and that's where I think most of my problems come from is, like, you mentioned rules before, and it's like, that's so important to have, not even to explain them all, but just as the creator to have the rules and understand what's going on, even if you don't show or tell all of it.
Yeah. Right.
And it's just, that was another one of those examples where, no, like, that's, yeah, like, he's got a criminal past. Like,
but we need him to be smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, here's two things that I like. Let me smash them together and that's good enough.
But that's like, this movie. I like AC/DC, and that's the thing.
Right.
Stephen King loves AC/DC, so he wants him in the movie.
Yeah, but it's not uncommon for a Stephen King character to have... Stephen King has also a habit of giving too much detail sometimes in his books. But that, you know, to help develop the character, of course, like Jack Torrance in The Shining, they go into very in-depth detail about his past of alcoholism and his abuses of Danny. And that's something that could have been with the character of Bill. They didn't. No, but it's just, it's an example of when Stephen King has succeeded, didn't do it this time.
Well, and he's written successful screenplays before this.
Yeah.
And so it's weird that I think the biggest problem with this film is in the writing. Like, it's not a great...
a lot of directing issues, too, I think.
I agree. Yeah. I shouldn't say it's the whole problem. But, like, one of the big problems here is, like, you're talking about all of the rules that don't add up and characters that don't make any sense. And it's the screenplay that I feel like drops the ball the most. Mm-hmm. There are directing problems in that it doesn't seem to really have a perspective. It doesn't...
It's a weird, like, ensemble movie where... I know Emilio Estevez is supposed to be our hero, but there are like 15-minute scenes of Kurt and Yardley Smith just doing their thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so the movie's about them now. And then it cuts to the little boy out in a town. I'm like, so the movie's about him now. And it's like, yes, eventually all these people come together at the truck stop, but it takes so long to get to that. And I don't know who I'm supposed to care about for like the first half of this movie.
And once they get to the truck stop, they get like a little scene and then they become inconsequential.
Yes.
It's like their quest was to get to that and then question mark.
There's a lot of characters in this movie also that not only that live, but get introduced. I mean, they were there probably the whole time, but then they get a line and then they die.
Yeah.
We mentioned earlier the Green Goblin truck sneaking up on that guy in the marina, Brad, who has to steal that ring. He can't not, even though, you know, and then,
he tries to steal a lady's ring who died when her window apparently rolled her up and killed her.
Which would have been, I'm not saying, like, I want to see that, but that would have been kind of a scary scene.
But it's one of those things of, like, everyone else is about to get on a boat and go to safety, and he stops to steal a ring.
His name is Brad.
Yeah.
Which they've never introduced before that he's, like, some sort of klepto or even a thief.
Nope.
But earlier, they're all having their fun, you know, they're all waking up. Someone's got a sandwich on his shirt. It's funny. And this guy in a green shirt pops in, kicks up in the door. And I forget if he says what the hell or what the fuck. He's like,
what the fuck is happening?
What the fuck is happening like here?
I was like, that was the most connected I felt to the movie because that was like, I was like, right guy.
I feel like that was the guy who like wasn't cast in the movie. He just like walked in the middle of filming. He's like, what the fuck is happening here?
He came in for a gas that day.
And Stephen King is just like, keep rolling.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's perfect.
Will you sign this release form?
Yeah. Now we're going to kill you.
Yeah. And they kill him right away.
That's exactly as far as I know, I don't remember seeing that guy in any other part of the movie. He doesn't at least say anything else in the movie. And so he says that and then he gets shot.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like immediately.
There's two of those. And that's another weird thing is you mentioned Andy. I did not catch so many names in this movie.
No, you are rattling off the names.
You are getting the names.
And I'm like,
I was 50 minutes in and at one point they're going, Bill, Bill. And I'm like,
That's me.
No, I met you. First, I nodded with a smile, but I went, that's Emilio Estevez's character. Mm. I've gone half of this movie, because also everyone's calling each other Bubba.
Right.
Yeah, there was a few Bubbas.
There was a few Bubbas.
Like, wait, but Pat Hingle's character's name is actually Bubba?
Right.
Because he had the license plate that said Bubba. I don't know who was Bubba.
I don't know. And I don't know if you have a name, if you can call other people that as a nickname. I don't go around calling everyone else Bill. Or, hey, Billy.
You should. Maybe I should.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's just spend a day at Complexity. We'll call everybody Bill.
Call me by your name.
Can we talk about the shitting scene?
Oh, I really want to. Thank you.
I blocked it out of my mind.
Because I have notes on that.
Is Steve.
I think it's Steve.
Please, Bill, let's talk about the shitting scene.
So I mentioned earlier I watched this movie with subtitles.
Oh no.
Well, when you have a kid, when you have a baby, you don't want to wake him up.
I'm fine with the subtitles.
I'm afraid of what they're gonna do
and say
in this scene.
And I honestly get a weird laugh out of subtitles sometimes. I don't know if any of you watch Marvel's Agents of Shields. The subtitles go into detail on things breaking, which I'm like, oh, that's kind of funny. But with this, Emilio comes in. He's kicking under the stall, going, Steve? Mm-hmm. Steve, are you there? Subtitles. Flatulence.
Plus, I'd like to point out that the urinal was set, what I think was directly in front of the door to that stall.
Yes.
So, like, whoever designed that bathroom was an asshole.
Yes. Yeah. The urinal is directly outside of the door. So if you open the door to that stall, you would just hit the person who was peeing.
Right. But like, why?
Why is he just farting throughout the entire scene?
There's two other subtitles I have to give.
Oh. Okay, go for it.
Oh, no.
Because he goes on, there's guns on there. You heard him telling me to shut up. Flatulence.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What was he got? Grenades? Squish.
Oh, no.
The word squish in subtitles.
I think that's almost worse than actually listening to it.
It was. Okay. Yeah, it wasn't great.
If you had to read that scene in a Stephen King book, it would have been so much worse than watching it.
Squish.
Yeah. Ugh.
It's very rare that I'm sitting watching a movie and just marveling. Like, why? Who? Am I supposed to find this funny?
And that's the thing, is it wasn't a funny conversation at all. There was nothing that felt like the scene was supposed to be played for laughs.
Except they just hounded fart noises.
Yeah, like they handed it to the sound designer and he was like, I hate you, Stephen King. Like, look what I'm going to do to your goddamn movie.
Or he was like, okay, the guy's in the bathroom. There should be some noises, I guess.
Yeah.
Here you go. This is bathroom noises, track two.
Yeah. Do we have an AC/DC song about this? No? Okay, good.
Okay.
For the party.
Ooh, yeah. I don't know about you guys. And we had a whole Project for Awesome podcast where we talked about toilets, but
we did.
Look, if I ever run into anyone in a bathroom, don't talk to me.
No,
don't talk to me.
Party fucking foul. That is underlined in my notes.
Like, yeah, even if there are trucks attacking us, do not talk to me.
This is private time.
Yeah.
I will eventually come out of this bathroom and then you can talk to me. And so this whole time I'm just watching this scene completely uncomfortable and unhappy. I'm unhappy about everything. I'm unhappy about why doesn't he stop shitting? Why is Emilio talking to him here? I guess because they need a bit of, why not wait for him to get out of the stall and then say, hey, don't go anywhere yet. I have a question. This scene was very upsetting to me. It was the only time in the movie that I actually was like, I really wish I could turn this off. Like the rest of the movie, I'm like, whatever. But
that was the scene where I was very happy. I think at that point, like, my girlfriend had texted, like, I'm on my way home. And I was like, please let the scene finish before she gets home. I don't want her to walk in and be like, oh, this is what you're watching this week?
Is this for that podcast again?
Yeah. This was like one of those scenes where I was like, can I fast forward through this, please?
I felt the same way. And I don't normally do that. Like, normally in B movies, I won't fast forward through things. I'm like, I want to see what the director does. And if it's bad, that's fine. I can catalog it. But in this one, I was just, oh, God, stop this scene. It's unpleasant. And I don't like things that are just unpleasant to be unpleasant. So.
I would like to, there was, I like, when there's, if there's going to be a bathroom scene, unless it's being played for a joke, mm-hmm. I think you can leave the noises just out entirely. I've heard that, like, there's TV shows that, like, a lot of TV shows at least, if you notice, if a character is in the bathroom, going to the bathroom, you will never hear like a stream. You will never hear the going to the bathroom part.
Right.
You will just like hear them talking about whatever they're supposed to be talking about while they're in the bathroom scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's the way to go.
Oh, yeah. And there's like, so much you could do with that, too. Yeah. Like, you can have the trucks rumbling outside and, that reverberation in that tile. Like, there's so much interesting sound stuff you could do.
But instead, you get squish.
And there are some interesting sound things in this movie that actually surprised me. When Yardley Smith and Kurt, I will never get these names right, when they show up at that gas station and the guy's
like
dead.
Kurt and Connie? They're like very similar names.
Yeah, I think it's Connie.
Okay.
I had to go look the guy up because he looked
the
love child of Beck and what's the guy's name? Peter. Oh, I wrote it down even. He's in like Animal House and The Mask. Like, oh.
I was
Peter Reigert?
Don't know the gentleman.
Oh, he's, yeah. That, but like him and Beck, if they got it on, okay. That would be Kurt.
He did look familiar to me, but then I looked him up and I was like,
nothing.
Yeah, he played like Who Man Number 4 in When the Grinch Stole Christmas or whatever. Like
a Who Man.
Like not human. Who Man.
Who Man.
But yes,
his career's really taken off.
Yeah. Well, and another thing that I found fascinating was Giancarlo Esposito's in here, and he has no lines, I don't think. He's just in the arcade, and when the machine starts spitting stuff out, he just starts stuffing his pockets. This guy was in Do the Right Thing. Mm-hmm. He was in Better Call Saul Breaking Bad. Like, what are you doing here?
I think if you, without context that Stephen King is directing it, if someone said, hey, we're going to do a Stephen King movie, being an actor, I might jump at that.
I don't disagree,
especially,
but I'm still
at that time.
It's just weird. That,
it does
like,
feel like one of those movies that like people sign up for, and they're like, "Oh no,
prequels."
And especially like if the comet stuff was all added on afterwards. Of like, like I said, like the idea of this movie is exciting.
Yeah.
Like the idea of the trucks coming to life and trying to kill people. I like that idea.
Love that idea. But going back to sound design, when Kurt and Connie, I think that's her name, show up at the first gas station where the attendant's dead.
Yes.
And is he dead?
Is he dead? They cut and they have the sound of an engine turning over. And it's very much like an ice pick, like just really hits hard. And I feel like that's effective. And the sound of the trucks was always very effective. Mm-hmm. But again, we're going against rules and we're being convenient. So like, well, the trucks make sound when they need to be scary. But then they don't make any sound when they need to kill someone. And that, I find that really frustrating. Because it's like, well, make them loud and scary. You can have a movie where they're loud and scary all the time.
That
right. If you need a silent villain, like, just get, like, a Prius or something.
That's the other
thing. 1986, sure.
Yes.
I don't want to dive too far into it because it's too big of a question for this movie. The normal car, like, little cars. Don't we see evidence that some of the cars killed people? Not
some.
The trucks. But your Lee Smith and Kurt, Lisa Simpson and Kurt, their car never turns on them. That's a scary movie, being trapped in a car that's trying to kill you.
Yeah.
But
also, the only gun that freaks out is the one that's mounted to a car.
Yeah.
All of their guns don't freak out. There's the inconsistency of like, okay, why isn't every vehicle, every machine freaking out and trying to kill people? Why
is it only? Because the launcher could just fire itself and be done.
Yeah.
Yeah, like this was a frustrating thing for me because like the sprinkler thing was the one that got me thinking like, well, is it just machines as in anything with a moving part or is it electricity? Like what is it?
The trucks do when there's a scene where they turn off the lights in the gas station.
Right. They have like a weird telekinesis thing and they can hear everything you're saying.
What do you mean they cut the power, man? They're animals.
And by the way, at that point, if I realized machines were going crazy, I would have unplugged everything.
Yeah.
And no, they're trying to listen to the jukebox. They got the lights going. They got the grill going. Just, I don't get it.
And like early on, like in my notes, I put down, he's directing via Murphy's Law. Like, if there's an item in this scene that can freak out, it will freak out. And that was the arcade scene for me.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just
so
like,
weird.
That set up a terrifying world that, like, doesn't carry over to the rest of this movie where the arcade cabinet freaks out and is, like, showing these weird symbols that, like, maybe connect to the alien stuff a little bit. Who knows? But, like, the cigarette machine is freaking out. This arcade cabinet, like, shoots lasers at him or something.
Hypnotizes him.
Yeah, it does something. But, like, everything in that room is, like, going haywire a little bit. And that sets up a world where you're like, okay, this is going to spread. It's like a wave of like, this place is having this. Next, everything in the kitchen will start freaking out. Next, everything in the bathroom will start freaking out. Next, every, like, all the cars will do this. And like, we don't see enough evidence of that. And I think a lot of it is budget, to be fair.
Yeah.
Like, if you wanted to have every car in the world essentially is doing this, because they allude to that. The Emilio's, like Bill's, solution to this whole thing is he says to Brett, like, there's this island we can go to called Haven. No cars, no motor vehicles. And it's like, okay, then what?
Are you going to grow crops? What's happening there?
Yeah. And apparently, like, by the time they get there, the whole thing's solved anyways by the Russians. So who knows?
You just stole a boat.
Yeah.
Leave it to the Russians.
Save the day as usual. The one thing I want to talk about before we wrap up is the terrible injected into this movie love story that exists between Bill and Brett.
That is very much terrible and very much injected into this movie.
The first time we see them speak, the first thing she says to him is like, you're cute. And I'm like, what? Are you old friends? What's happening? Is this like a rekindling? But doesn't seem like it. It seems like she showed up at this truck stop. Mm-hmm. She had hitchhiked with the Bible salesman, and she shows up and is just immediately in love with this man who has done nothing.
I mean, in her defense, have you seen Emilio Estevez?
Yeah. He is pretty cute.
He is pretty cute. But it wouldn't lead me to just, like, in the middle of a machine uprising to go, you know what we should do? I just found out you have a criminal past. I know nothing else about you. Let's go have sex in the back of this truck stop.
This truck stop, everyone who enters it loses all inhibitions. Because at one point, Kurt and Yeardley Smith, he's finger banging her, guys.
Yeah.
In front of everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And I talked to a friend about doing this movie tonight. And he says he watched this movie a lot on TBS or USA. They don't cut that out.
Oh. Weird.
Oh, dear. Well, you know, that's fine with me.
Because I asked him about that. I was like, oh, there's this weird scene where, you know, they're obviously, you know, doing hand stuff. And he says, oh, you know, now that you say it, I remember this. And he never owned the movie. It's like, I definitely remember commercials in this movie.
But we were talking about earlier with, like, the Stephen King, like, writing lines that you don't expect to hear out loud. And one of them comes after, like, the morning after the sex scene between Bill and Brett is when they're waking up the next morning. Apropos of nothing, she says, you sure make love like a hero.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, so he's the hero of the movie because he makes love like a hero.
There was a throwaway line earlier about, I don't know what the hell she said about him being a hero. She calls him a hero once more in the movie before that. But it doesn't make it better because I obviously don't remember that.
I mean, I think it's the same idea as the, like, we made you thing, where it's the second Stephen King gets an idea about, like, oh, I want this movie to say this thing, or I, like, want this to be part of the movie, then it's like, let's not integrate that in any comprehensible way. Let's just have somebody, like, say that out loud.
I think you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Golden, like, oh, yeah, you make love like a hero. Like, that's cool.
And,
like,
it's in the movie.
Yeah. Good job.
I want that character. I want him to make love like a hero. Like, you tell him that he does that.
Yeah. Because if it were Springsteen, everybody would believe it. Yeah. We need to move on to how we would fix this. I want to start with Bill.
Hey.
Bill, how would you fix Maximum Overdrive?
I think a plot Jenna and I had while watching this on Tuesday night was there wasn't a lot of plot. There wasn't a lot of, I have to do this. When they're at the gas station, no one says, I have to go get this person. The one person who has a story arc is the kid Deke.
Yep.
He realizes right away that the trucks are evil. He's hiding from the ice cream trucks. He's running away from lawnmowers.
He does a really good job, too.
He does a really good job. Whereas at the gas station, they're like,
I'm going to go outside.
I'm going to go outside and get hit by this truck like a big dum-dum. And Deke, he's going from A to B. He's hiding it right. Like, you know, he hears the flight of the Valkyries.
I forgot about that.
There's a lot we haven't talked about, but he.
That's when with the one time they were like, we can afford a plane today. Let's have a plane fly over, do nothing, but it'll be threatening.
But why is it the same flight plane of the Valkyrie?
I think it's the same plane that's crashed into the school bus. At the
end. That's awesome. I forgot. Like, this is another thing.
Like, why does the plane know of Apocalypse Now?
Well, what great movies do is reference better movies, Nick. Everyone knows that.
Ready Player One coming this soon.
This summer. Yeah, so I think he's the only one with anything resembling a story arc or plot.
Yeah.
So I think this might have been an okay, not kids movie, but definitely in that vein of Stephen King has experience like with younger characters. We mm-hmm. had Stand By Me was a good movie, or I'm thinking
or Cujo.
More Cujo, and I'm thinking more
that's
in the vein
not really
of Monster
a kids
Squad.
Movie, though.
Well, it's not. I don't think kids movies, but having a child protagonist.
Child,
is what you're
yeah, yeah, just that child protagonist. He can drop F bombs as much as he wants, but he was the only one of historic. He's the only one figuring things out, and I like him so much better than everyone else. Him and Wando were my favorite.
He was my hero when I watched this movie as a kid. Like,
that's who you connected with.
He was the cool one, yeah.
And he got some cool shots. Like, I know the sprinkler thing made us ask a lot of questions, but I like that shot where he's biking in front of all the sprinklers and he turns around. What was that? So I would make it more about him. I would localize the threat, because this movie also made me think of another Stephen King movie, The Mist, where there's this, you know, this big daunting mist, or even Under the Dome, another Stephen King thing, where there is this big threat to a population of people, but it's localized. Because mm-hmm. saying it could be happening to the world, but not implying what's going on in the world, kind of bugged me. And it would also maybe explain, you know, Matt, you mentioned earlier, like maybe implied that there's a wave of device craziness going mm-hmm. on. So say, oh, there's a research lab over there, cars are going crazy, Deke's got to save the day or get his dad or mom. That's it.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Tuna, how would you fix Maximum Overdrive? That,
I mean, I thought about a lot of the things Bill is saying, like fix the rule problem and like have that cohesion under there. Mm-hmm. I think my strategy personally would be to lean into the comedy. Like, stop trying to, like, oh no, we have to justify it with the comet and go full hog into like the weird comet stuff, get rid of like the overwrought like attempts at drama,
maybe like Mars Attacks.
Yeah a lot more like Mars Attacks, that sort of style of like, oh, like get campy with it even.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but not, it just seemed like all the exposition was dumped because Stephen King contractually had to have exposition between him smashing Hot Wheels together. And it's like, my real good is like based entirely on that idea of like, well, I want to smash my Hot Wheels together in a movie. How do I do that and not make it like stupid?
Right.
And so I think that would be, like have the characters get even goofier, like don't ground them even, because even now they're not very grounded, but they seem like they're trying to be.
Yes.
And it's just that weird middle ground of that it doesn't work.
Like, I agree.
There's no decision.
Go
being
a
made.
Direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, yeah. I would shoot it better, because holy shit,
it's an ugly film.
It's very ugly.
And it's like there's some cool stuff in there. Like every once in a while, I would see it, like the one with the lawnmower, where mm-hmm. like the action Deke's mm-hmm. in the background, like hiding from the ice cream truck. And it's like, I really liked that shot.
Yeah, there's a few shots, like maybe five, that like in this movie where you're like, oh, that was a good job.
Yeah,
good job on that one shot.
I know. I
right
feel
there.
Like I could probably go through them all right here.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, in the arcade, there was a cool like low angle coming from the thing, or like even like not all of the vehicle POVs, but like a couple of them were like pretty cool. And like, but other than those like handful of cool shots, it was a lot of like eye level mm-hmm. mediums mm-hmm. or like high wide shots. And it was like, why is half of this movie shot from the top of a ladder?
I think that's because the director of photography did not speak English.
And had one eye by the end of the production.
There's that. But also, Stephen King didn't know what he was doing. And so the director of photography had to not just think about how to shoot a shot list, but to actually come up with a shot list as he was doing
and
it.
And probably shoot an entire scene with that master, knowing that, like, who knows what other coverage
exactly.
we're going to get.
There was, there was a few scenes like that I noticed where it was like, you have everything in the frame already, and you're just going to play the scene out.
Yeah. Right. And that's hard to do. Like, that, even in films where with directors who are really good at that, it can get tedious and boring. Like, it's, why are we, just come on, let me see the actor, for God's sakes. So, I agree with that.
Yeah, and boring. I would also make it not boring. That's probably my main complaint.
Be not boring.
It's just nothing, like, the tension never ebbs or flows. It's just all, like, I mean, I appreciated that, oh, I guess that was my third one. I don't know if I ever mentioned that, but, like, the bridge scene, where it's like, okay, shit's just going to go crazy. Like, we're not going to bother with a lot of, like, characterization, like, get to know these characters. The characterization is like, oh, you're cute. And it's like, all right, like, that apparently tells us the only thing we need to know about this character.
I think she, like, had the most characterization.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, like,
I did like her line where she's like, if you touch me again, you're going to be wiping your ass with a hook.
Like, I know. I will say that this movie may, like, I noticed a bunch of stuff because I loved it when I was a kid and then was forbidden from watching it because it gave me nightmares. But, like, I noticed things like Estevez having a problem with Pat, or what's his name? Pat Bubba.
Pat Hingle.
Yeah. Having a problem with him. Like, they have that conversation where he's like, fuck you, man. Like, oh, I'll get you, boy. Like, the whole, that whole exchange, I'm like, oh, maybe this is where my distrust of capitalism comes from. And then, like, Brett in the car, I'm like, maybe this is why I'm a feminist. Okay, cool. Maybe this is why I'm scared of steamrollers.
I mean, as long as it's all the positive ones.
Right.
I think this movie, I'm glad it shaped you in those ways, because I feel like in many other ways, it could have messed you up.
Yeah, dude, the arcade scene, like watching that, I was like,
I'll never play video games again.
No, not even that. I'm like, Stephen King, I feel like you may have some weird thoughts about people of color.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, he
I also
walks
had
in.
That thing of, like, the first thing he does is just, like, steal a bunch of stuff.
First thing he does
and
is
his
say,
line
yo
is,
mama.
Yo mama.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. And then he dies. And he's like,
that felt like just, for me, that felt like a very dense white man writing that scene. Like, I was not surprised that Stephen King wrote that scene.
And a white man in the 80s,
too. It's also on Stephen King, I think, has always had an issue of the way he writes anyone besides white people in his books.
Besides white men.
Yes. Okay. Like, honestly, like, I do also enjoy some Stephen King books, but that is, I think it's also part of his thing of, like, Bill was talking about earlier, like, needing to put so much detail into things that when he feels the need to describe a character who he knows he does not have any sort of real life experience being that, he starts to get so granular with his detail that you're like, nope, this is either offensive or you don't know what you're talking about and you're trying to act like you do. And that's, like you said, with women, with people of color, it's across the board, people in Stephen King books don't feel real unless they're a white dude.
I would say even the white dudes don't feel real.
No, but if anyone in there feel, because
Stephen King has really potent story ideas, and he is a good technical writer. He
write one book every 5 years, one at every 6 months. Slow down.
Just take a pill. He is the Steven Soderbergh of novels. He just won't stop doing stuff. He's like, I'm going to retire. Because Stephen King did that. He was like, I'm going to write one more book and then I'm done. And then he's written 250,000 books since then.
And they're all 1,000 pages long.
Yeah. So long.
Well, and there's even the call out in The Simpsons where they're at, like, some writer's convention or something. And they're like, oh, Stephen King, like, come up with an idea. And he's like, okay, there's a writer and his lamp is haunted. Like, I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Like, nice.
Matt, how would you fix Maximum Overdrive?
My note says everything. It just says fix everything.
That's fair.
And I think you kind of do. You kind of have to go back and just remove Stephen King from the process. I think you could let him write a short story that inspires this movie. You cannot let him write this movie. You cannot let him direct this movie. Just keep him away from the movie.
I would be curious because I found out that there's another adaptation of it.
It's called Trucks.
Trucks in 97.
Yeah, Timothy Busfield.
I've never seen it. I know nothing about it. I did not know it existed.
I tried to watch it.
It's an adaptation of the same work?
Yeah, so the original short story was called Trucks. It was in Night Shift.
Okay.
And I haven't read it. I'd kind of like to read it because I like short stories more than I like novels. Yeah, it was done in 97. I tried to watch it. It was on Netflix at one point or Amazon Prime. I can't remember where it was. I tried to watch it, and it was like the weird thing about Maximum Overdrive is like the shots are fine. Everything's in focus. Everything is lit. The sound is good, like generally, especially for that era. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was watching a rough cut with Trucks.
Hmm.
Like I felt like it hadn't been color timed. I felt like it hadn't been. I didn't think there was a final sound mix. Like it was weird, and I didn't get very far into it. So, I actually would with this podcast in mind. I'd kind of like to go back and just have a peek at it and just sort of see like, well, was I just watching a bad transfer? Like what exactly was I watching? So, anyway.
But yeah, I think like removing Stephen King. That's my main fix. Yeah. Is just like let someone else, and like maybe they've tried with Trucks and maybe it didn't work out either. But like, I do feel like the core of that idea is good, and I feel like you can do something with that. You can make it tense. You can make it more drawn out. And I think Bill touched on a good thing of like give these people some direction, and not. I don't mean like Stephen King directing, but I mean like in the story of like these people. I don't know what any of them want to do before. They are trapped in a truck stop. I don't know who any of them are. I don't know who I'm supposed to care about, who I'm not. Like, I want to have some sort of perspective of like, okay, this person is the main person that I am supposed to care about. And I think Emilio is obviously supposed to be that, but they don't give us that in any sense of the way. And like, I'm fine doing it from the kid's point of view. I'm fine doing it from Emilio's point of view. Just make it clear and give us one hero with a cast of characters around him, but just... Yeah, just I think remove Stephen King.
I agree. That's my first way to fix this is to remove Stephen King from the equation altogether. I'm a little bit I read a lot of things about this where people were like, you know, this is why a novelist shouldn't direct a movie, and I think that's a bunch of horse shit. I think I want novelists to direct movies. I want a baseball player to direct movies. I want a lawyer to direct a movie. But I don't want a major studio to hand someone who has never directed even a student film a $10 million budget to go make their thing. I think that that's stupid. I think that is a really unwise decision on the part of the studio. And it perplexes me. I don't care how famous you are. It's weird to me. It's weird to me from a business standpoint that you would do that.
It was sort of weird to me that he didn't have more... Well, maybe he had more studio experience with all the films that had been made at that point.
Sure.
But I thought he would have at least... This is me being post-optimistic. I would have hoped that he would have been on set for some of his movies, like Christine or Carrie.
He might have been. But regardless, he doesn't even... like
he didn't learn anything.
I would have thought that he would have directed an episode of Tales from the Dark Side or something, you know? Right. Like, but he didn't. He had no experience. It's really weird to me because there are writers who are working in Hollywood who have created things that are pretty good that have to struggle to get their first directing credit. And it's bizarre to me. It's very, very bizarre. Yeah. So I would definitely remove Stephen King from this. And then, honestly... if I'm just looking at what we have, I don't think I'll have a lot of people who agree with me about this, but I think you could fix this movie a bit with editing. It's still not a great film. Like I'm not going to lie about that, but I think if you start this film, if you get rid of the goddamn soundtrack and you start this film at the gas station, you have no exposition.jpg, you have no bridge scene. You just have a very isolated, I like the idea of making it locally locked.
Well, I think it also, then you get to start this movie with like a sense of comfort and safety. Yeah. And you feel like this is this world.
Yeah.
These people feel safe. They don't know, like we don't know what's coming. They don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if they're just pulling into a truck stop, we're like, all right, these are people. We get to meet them one by one. And
right. And then slowly the trucks that pull in start to act up on their own. And then weird shit starts happening. And then you're sort of invested in these characters a little bit more. And then you cut as they get onto the boat and they go off, and you don't have this whole thing with the UFO getting shot. What the like, none of that works for me. So I think there could be – this is actually something I would love to take into Premiere and just chop the end and the beginning off and watch it and just see, like, what does this feel like now? Like, how does it work? Mm-hmm. I also really like the stuff with the kid. It reminded me of The Stand. I like that it's this wasteland that he's in right now. There was a lot of stuff in here that felt like other Stephen King stuff.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And I'm not opposed to that. Like, I like The Stand. I think that that's an interesting story, and the idea of a plague wiping out humanity is is interesting. I like last person on Earth stories. So the whole thing with the kid being the last person on Earth for a while, that is also compelling. So I think there's a lot that can be done here. But I don't think that this is a complete disaster, which will lead me into how we rate these things. I rate all of these films based on categories like storms. So a one is not too bad. It's like a light rain. And then a five could kill you. So I'm going to give this a one. Like, I can't hate it. It has things in it I really don't like. But I feel like there's enough there that I do believe it could be really helped in editing. And I could watch it again. I would fast forward through the shitting scene. But beyond that, yeah, I'm gonna give it a one.
Wow.
And it has so many things in it that I like as well. I like people trapped in a location. I like, and that was the other thing, the reason I would cut off the exposition and everything is because I like an inexplicable mystery. Which, like, if the machines just rise up and there's no talk of comets, there's no talk of aliens, there's no talk of, like, what's happening.
Right.
Then the whole we made you thing becomes more potent, because then it does feel like a personal, like the machines are just revolting.
Yeah.
And that I can get behind. So there's a lot in here that I like. And so, yeah, I'm just going to give it a one. Matt, I think you're going to give it something different.
Or I'm going to give it something exactly the same.
Oh, dear. Oh.
Because my scale is a 1 to 5 enjoyment scale. It's the possessed mushroom puppet scale. And I'm going to give this 1 out of 5 possessed mushroom puppets, because I did not enjoy watching this film. I think this is one of the worst films we've watched this podcast.
Oh, wow.
And I enjoyed it. I think the reason I disliked it more than a lot of the other movies we've watched is because I can look at Things and I can look at Manos and go, okay, these are movies made over a weekend by some people who decided to make a movie, and I can at least respect that. I'm not going to enjoy it, but I can respect it and like look at it and go, cool, don't like your movie at all, you get a one, moving on. This is a movie where I look at it, I'm like, you spent $10 million, you had Emilio Estevez, and the way you used your resources was to make a boring movie where nothing really happens, and you didn't think through all these things. Maybe that was all because of cocaine. Who knows?
But you can't judge it that way, right? Because it's like, I don't care why it's boring.
Right. Like, right. If I would just like watch this movie on its own, not knowing any of this backstory, like, I don't know. This was one of those movies where I think I paused it 3 or 4 times while watching it to be like, how much of this movie is left? I want it to be over. And it was always more than I thought it was.
It's also not well-structured.
No.
So there is no sense of like, are we in the middle of the second act? I have no idea.
Like we talked about earlier, the climax of this movie comes out of absolute nowhere, and it just happens.
Hey, let's escape.
Yeah. Hey, it worked. Oh, wait. There's the big bad truck villain. He's here. Boom. Oh, never mind. He's gone. Adios, son of a bitch, or whatever he says.
Motherfucker.
Yeah. So, yeah, I didn't like this movie. I will never watch it again, but I would buy one of those truck toys if they got one.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Tuna.
All right. My rating system is what food it reminds me of. So this one is a nice, tall, cold glass of Oh Yeah! Orange Pineapple Kool-Aid. Because it's the taste of my childhood. And going back to it as an adult, it does not stand the test of time at all. I mean, it's not like the worst thing ever, but at the end of the day, it's just like,
I
didn't need to like taste it ever again. And like, I will not go back to this Kool-Aid well again. I'm like, this chapter is closed in my life.
That is strikingly good.
I like how you closed your notebook as you
the audience can't see that, but you did just perfectly. Bloop.
I'll make the sound effect. Squish. Squished it.
Bill, how do you rate this?
I watch these movies with my wife, who I love very much, and she has a look that she gives to certain films we watch. I love calling this movie a film.
It was shot on film.
If the look continues, it usually means I have to. Yeah. If the look continues, I usually have to turn the movie off.
Mm.
This movie only got 3 looks. She was doing research for me on behalf of this movie. So we learned how long a truck could go around a gas station. Days, by the way. Days.
Yeah.
But there's one thing I would like to add. There is a bonus look. So we have 3 and a bonus look because we watched the trailer for this movie. And if you haven't yet, if you're here or if you're listening at home, watch the trailer for this movie. Stephen King's eyes are amazing. It is something else.
You haven't lived until you've seen the trailer for this movie.
I haven't apparently lived. Not lived
oh,
yet.
Man. Oh, man. But it was this whole marketing thing where he was front and center. And he has that line where he's like, I'm going to scare the hell out of you. I'm like, what?
It's more like this. I'm going to scare the hell out of you.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. So the final thing that we like to do is recommend a movie, or in this case, 4 movies, that will help get the taste of Maximum Overdrive out of your mouth. We call it real good. So, Matt, what's your real good today?
Ooh, someone else will go first, just in case they take mine. I don't want to take anybody else's, but I will, maybe. My recommendation is Duel, a 1971...
I was right!
Yeah, Steven Spielberg film. Huh. I think it's maybe his first movie? One of his earliest.
Well, it's his first feature-length movie, but it was a made-for-TV movie.
Yes. So
and
Duel.
It's so good.
It's really good. I remember watching it in film school for some class and just really liking it. And I think in my head throughout the years, these two movies have kind of blended a little bit.
Sure.
Like when people talk about Maximum Overdrive, it's like, oh yeah, it's based on a Stephen King thing, trucks come to life. I'm like, is that Duel? Did I see that?
Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, I think I got my Stevens mixed up and my angry truck movies mixed up. But no, go watch Duel because it's better than Maximum Overdrive and it still involves trucks trying to kill people.
Yeah, and it's super good.
Yeah.
Tuna, what is your real good?
All right, my real good, I'm not sure. I feel like this may be controversial mostly because I don't really know what the perception of this movie is as to good or bad. Okay. But Crank.
Oh, with Jason Statham.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because to me, like that, I remember after watching it, I read an interview with the directors and they were just like, yeah, we were playing Grand Theft Auto. And we thought like, man, how cool would it be a movie to be just like running around like we do in Grand Theft Auto with things blowing up. And it's like the story is bare bones. There's like very little exposition to it. It's just an excuse for Jason Statham to run around like driving cars through shopping malls and like making things explode and like jumping out of a helicopter and like just a bunch of action set pieces, but without any pretense of like, no, we're also going to tell a deep story. It's like, no. It's a, like this story is literally here to serve. How does Jason Statham blow this thing up? Okay. Now, where does he need to go to blow something else up? And like,
perfect.
And it's, there's no, they don't present it as like, oh, we need this or we need that. Like, it's just like, cool. And they do a lot of like interesting camera work with it.
Excellent.
So, it's not a bad movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Bill, what's your real good?
So I was working on a long list because I like to sort of, find little parallels here and there. So I was looking up writers who directed movies. We know a few. I was looking up better Stephen King works. But ultimately, I went with another Yeardley Smith work, which is I would recommend you watch any of the early Simpsons Treehouse of Horrors. That might be a little bit of a cheat, but I thought about it for a long time, and a buddy, the same friend who helped me with like the TBS reference, was like, yeah, just recommend Treehouse of Horrors, man.
I think there's one based on Maximum Overdrive.
I know there's a Simpsons episode based on Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a Simpsons episode based on everything.
That's true.
We also have The Shining, and you can go on Amazon. Go on Amazon. There's about 4 of the Treehouse of Horror episodes collected. So
that's
check
great.
It out.
All right. Well, I had a lot of things because one of my favorite things is a group of people trapped in a place. Mm. And this movie didn't do a great job of that. So I've got two, and I can't decide which, but I'm going to go with the one that I think is the superior movie, and that's Tremors.
Nice.
I fucking love Tremors. The first Tremors. I don't like any of the sequels, but I really love that first movie. I think there is a strange perfection to it.
It's a good movie.
Which is funny because the name of the town they're in is Perfection, Nevada. It is, it's so well written. It's so well acted. It's structured so perfectly. It is hilarious as well as really scary at times. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of great practical effects. It's a little bit gory, but it is, I think, God, just one of the best horror movies. It is really, really entertaining and a lot of fun.
I am so glad that you said that one, because that's on my list of alternatives, but with a question mark, because I haven't seen it in so long. And watching Maximum Overdrive really shook my faith in me as a child. So I was like, man, like, I would like to recommend Tremors, but I haven't watched it in so long. Like, I don't know if it holds up. And thank you, Nick. This is like Christmas Day for me, knowing that, like, that one does.
I watched it about a year ago, and I really enjoyed it. And was sort of, I had that same moment of, like, is this going to be bad? Oh, dear. But, like, I'm really surprised. It's also, like, if you haven't seen Tremors, you should see Tremors.
I haven't seen Tremors.
You should see it. I think you'd really enjoy it. It's a really fun, well-made movie. And Kevin Bacon's great in it. And Fred Ward is great in it. Like, everybody's just really good. So, anyway, that is going to do it for this episode of Real Bad. We're going to be taking a week off next week as I am traveling. I'm going to NAB in Vegas. And so, yeah, when we come back, we'll be leaning into some more sequels, I believe, is the plan. And then Matt's also going to be traveling here real soon. So we're going to be shaking things up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you for listening. Real Bad is a part of the Cage Club podcast network. You can go to cageclub.me if you want to see more of our friends and what they're doing. Before we head out, Matt, where can people find you?
Find me on the internet, just mostly on Twitter, at Matthew Gatos. Also, bonus real good, watch The Shining. It's really good.
Yeah. Bonus real good, watch Demon Knight. It's also really good.
I just feel like we brought The Shining up like 5 or 6 times throughout this podcast because we're like, Stephen King wrote it and it's a good movie.
Even though
he
doesn't like it.
He hates it. Yeah, and then he made one that was like, eh.
His movie's bad.
It's got some good actors in it, though. Tuna, where can people find you and what would you like them to know about you? What media? I can't talk, but that's fine.
Okay, I'm on Twitter as @Toonaloons. I don't really say a whole lot, but when I do, I try to be funny. And then my band is at sovietfourthgrader.com.
I listened to it recently. It's real good.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it.
Excellent. Bill?
I don't really do anything on Twitter. I work on SciShow Kids, though. So if, you know, you like rated R movies and have kids, that's not a good connection. Watch SciShow Kids. Subscribe.
While you're watching Maximum Overdrive, they can watch SciShow Kids.
In another room.
Yes.
Yes, preferably. All right, thank you guys so much for podcasting with me, and I'll be talking to some of you in a couple of weeks. And until then, this has been Real Bad.